Our reading is from Nelson Mandela's autobiography entitled Long Walk to Freedom. In his own words, he shares how he could maintain hope through 27 years of imprisonment. I never lost hope. I always knew that deep down in every human heart, there is mercy and generosity. No one is born hating another person because of the color of their skin or their background or their religion. People must learn to hate. And if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite. Even in the grimmest times in prison, when my comrades and I were pushed to our limits, I would see a glimmer of humanity in one of the guards, perhaps just for a second. But it was enough to reassure me and keep me going. Human goodness is a flame that can be hidden, but never extinguished. It was during those long and lonely years that my hunger for the freedom of my own people became a hunger for the freedom of all people, white and black. I knew, as well as I knew anything, that the oppressor must be liberated as surely as the oppressed. A person who takes away another person's freedom is a prisoner of hatred. They are locked behind the bars of prejudice and narrow-mindedness. The oppressed and the oppressor alike are robbed of their humanity. When I walked out of prison, that was my mission, to liberate the oppressed and the oppressor both. And so I never lost hope. This sermon is about hope. I will share stories about people facing difficult situations and how they found their hope again. The stories are serious, but even if, fortunately, you are not going through such a serious situation in your life, the basic principle will remain the same. When we are struggling with a painful dilemma, if we isolate ourselves, we will head down a path of despair. But if we make some good connections with another person, with nature, with spirit, then that connection will move us in the direction of hope. When I was minister at First Parish Brewster, this would be back in the late 1980s, we formed a partnership with an AIDS clinic in South Africa. Members of the congregation raised $50,000 for the clinic. And so the directors of the clinic came to visit us on Cape Cod. They were a young married couple. The husband walked with crutches, having been afflicted with polio as a child. And they told us about their lives, about their region of South Africa, where one third of the people had died of AIDS, and there were orphans in every neighborhood. Now, I thought I had seen a lot when our UU community on Cape Cod went through the AIDS pandemic, and we had two funerals a month for years for our beloved gay men. But in numbers, it was nothing compared to what this young couple had experienced. They had truly been and were in the middle of a Holocaust. But I can tell you without a doubt that this young couple knew more about authentic joy than any member of my congregation, including myself. The hope within them was invincible. And it was then that I understood how Nelson Mandela could endure 27 years in imprisonment without becoming bitter. This young couple was connected to a love larger than themselves. And it began in their tradition with their ancestors. Everyone who had died was with them, helping them in spirit, inspiring them. And they were connected with their people here and now, their tribe. You see, it was not about their two little egos. It was not about how nice their kitchen was, or how much money they had, or whether he could ever walk normally like other men. It was about loving the people. They would serve their people with compassion and with this boundless joy, because there was not time for bitterness or despair. There was much too much love to give and receive. Hope grows through connection. Now, it's utterly normal and natural for all of us to feel sorrow and anxiety about things happening in our private life or in the world. We all struggle, we all stumble, and we all grieve deeply. And frankly, the recent presidential campaign was the nastiest one I remember in my lifetime. It has left wounds and uncertainty in its wake. But the point is this: when we struggle in isolation, it leads us on a path of despair. Despair grows in isolation. Hope grows in connection with other people, with the earth, with spirit, and with our deepest authentic self. Lucy loved her husband. He was her best friend for 30 years. Then he got leukemia. She took care of him, nursing him with great love, but still he died in his mid-50s. Lucy was bereft. Now, she was a humanist. She did take no comfort in the possibility of an afterlife. And she felt lost. And she felt aimless, like a boat without a rudder or a compass without a needle. So one day, she put on her tennis shoes and began to run. And she ran, and she ran, not quite knowing even why. And she built up her endurance. And then she began running to raise money for medical research about leukemia, first in local events in New England, and then across the nation, and then around the world. And in time, she became like a second mother to young people who had lost their sons and daughters to childhood leukemia. Lucy had found her connection. She had found a people to love. And there was no longer time for despair. There was too much love to give. Hope grows through connection. Dennis was my colleague. He was not ashamed to tell his story publicly if it could help anyone else. He was once a successful publisher. He had a lovely wife, two children, but he had a secret. One morning when he got up to go to work, he could not get past the side of the bed. He began to cry. Then he sobbed uncontrollably. He could not live without alcohol, and it was killing him. A secret addiction of any kind or manner is a terrible despair. Dennis hit bottom, and then he reached out for connection. It began by telling his wife. He started working a 12-step AA program. He made amends with the people in his life. It was hard work. He needed to start the day on his knees in prayer. He needed his AA sponsor and group. In time, he discovered a new calling, the Unitarian Universalist ministry. He was ordained and began an addictions ministry. He had found a people to serve, and there was no longer time for self-loathing. There was too much love to give and to receive. Hope grows when we make a connection. But hope is not a panacea. We face together serious problems: climate change, poverty, hatred towards people who are different. And all of these issues are very real, and we have to face them honestly and courageously. And in our personal life, there are accidents, illnesses, misfortunes, and ultimately death. We must face them honestly and courageously. And our feelings of sorrow, anxiety, anger, and fear are all normal. But to isolate is what then moves towards despair. It's hard enough to grapple with the pain of life, but to feel that pain in isolation is when it becomes overwhelming. And so what we all need, and what the world needs from us, is to make those connections. Connecting with our own authentic self, that is, learning to love ourselves as we are. Connecting with other people, connecting with the earth, and connecting with spirit or God. And I would say the central purpose of the Unitarian Church of Sharon is to encourage these connections of hope at every level. Maya was a lovely 5-year-old girl. She was playful and she was impish. One morning she was waiting for her bus along with her older sister. Their mother was watching after she put the two girls together in the line, a little distance away. They boarded the bus, but for some reason, who knows what's in the mind of a 5-year-old, she got off the bus, walked in front of it, and was crushed to death, with her mother watching. In the weeks and the months that came, the parents were just overwhelmed. There was nothing to say. I felt utterly helpless visiting them. The mother had women friends who would simply crawl in bed with her and hold her for hours at a time. The father tried to be strong, to keep the life going for the family. There were two other children, but the strain was always on his face. And this was early in my ministry, when I wondered, what am I doing? What keeps people going? What's kept the human race going through these tragedies, generation after generation? And I have learned over time, it is being held in love by a community that keeps us going. Being held in love by a community that keeps us going even through the deepest grief. And also something mysterious inside the human being that has kept our ancestors going generation after generation through all their losses, so we could have the gift of life today. Several years later, it was 3 or 4, when the grief was still hurting but was no longer debilitating, the couple adopted 2 homeless girls from Brazil and raised them with great love. And I knew the family up until the girls were teenagers. I know they were raised with great love And it was a joyful family. They had found more love to give and receive. Hope grows through connection. Sometimes the connection we need to make is to go take a walk on Moose Hill or Borderland or some beach, to commune with nature and leave this human confusion and this human unending pain behind and just be with the earth. And much of the poetry of Mary Oliver is about this connecting to renew our hope, as in this poem when she connects with a grasshopper. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, which is what I've been doing all day, strolling through the fields. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Hope will grow when we make a connection with other people, with grasshoppers, with anyone or anything that we genuinely love. The hope will grow. In this final story for the theists in the congregation, because for a theist, that connection with God is perhaps the ultimate hope. It was Christmas Eve, and I was feeling despair. I was in the midst of my midlife crisis. I won't ask for a show of hands how many people have gone through it. My marriage was struggling, our daughter was rebelling, and my old childhood demons had found their way out of the closet, and I couldn't put them back in again. It was Christmas Eve, and after my wife and daughter went to bed, I sat on the couch and stared at the lights of the Christmas tree. And I found myself praying, I need hope this year. Can you give me a sign of hope? This is a true story. The next morning, I awoke around 6 p.m. My wife was sleeping by my side. Our daughter was sleeping in the room next door, and the doors of the house were locked. I lay in bed for about 20 minutes and then got up and wandered downstairs. There on the mantel was a votive candle we'd left there, but now it was lit, and there was a single bead of wax. That candle had been lit about 10 minutes. There was no human being that lit that candle. I am a rational man, and I was not hallucinating. So it was an answer to my prayer. And whenever I feel despair, for whatever reason, I remember that candle. Hope grows through connection with our own inner self, with other people, with the earth, and with the spirit or God of our understanding. Despair grows when we isolate. hope grows when we make those connections. We join now in 3 or 4 minutes of personal meditation. I invite you to reflect on 2 questions. What are you struggling with right now in your life? And what connections could you make that would increase your hope? May each of us make connections of hope, and by doing so, bring more hope into this world. Amen. Blessed be.